The Guardian.
Football Weekly. Pjanic on the streets of Cardiff. Pjanic and the Isco, all exciting headlines we can look forward to ahead of the Champions League final with Real Madrid and Juventus now confirmed as participants. Before that though, there's domestic matters to settle. Grab your kit and strap those shin pads on, JT, because Chelsea could be celebrating the title this Friday night at West Brom, while Arsenal's win in Wednesday's battle of the arse v the can't be arsed has left the top four race hotter than ever. We'll be discussing all of that, plus playoffs, your post, Ajax, and why Sunday night is a big one in Italy and France, in this Football Weekly Extra. Hello, everybody. Jacob Steinberg's here today.
Hello, James.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
James Horncastle's here today.
Hey, Jimbo.
And Barry Glendinning's very much here today.
Hello.
Hello to you all. Also here on the line, Sid Lowe in Spain. Sid.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hey. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Sid, I picture you all kind of fluffy and, you know, tousle-haired after being kind of, you know, when somebody gets in from being absolutely drenched and they get, like, blow-dried and they're all, like, puffed up and stuff. That's you, isn't it? In a toweling robe, fresh back from the Calderon and the downpour.
Yeah, a little bit like that, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, it literally, there's 2 minutes to go and suddenly you kind of hear this crack of thunder and the rain's, I was going to say the rain's coming down sort of in front of us, but it was actually coming through. There is a reason why they're leaving the Calderon. It was coming through the roof, swirling in at the back, coming in at the sides. Everyone was soaked. It's a miracle that a few laptops didn't give in.
Wow.
And it was kind of a very Atletico way to end it all.
Right. You know, Barney Roney.
In the midst of this storm.
Yeah, Barney Roney tweeting, rain coming through the roof of the Calderon, laptop soaked. Sid Lowe being greeted and cheered by fanboys in the crowd. Wild night here.
It was quite wild, yeah.
Were you sat next to Barney?
Yeah, I was sitting next to Barney, yeah. It's quite nice. This is one of the nice things, actually, about European nights, when it's big enough that the paper sends two people. But, you know, I get to see those distant names from London.
Right, nice. Well, it all added to the atmosphere, I'm sure, having a Barney Roney there.
Well, he was the one leading it. He was there with his megaphone, getting everyone going. The Atletico fans were quiet until Barney turned up.
Did he take a chair home with him, Sid?
No, he didn't. But maybe take one of those plug sockets from underneath. The plug sockets are falling apart as well, by the way. Really? The rain going in there, it's not a safe environment.
Right. Plenty of Atletico fans did take chairs home with them. But the irony is, Sid, you were mentioning they may still need them at the Calderon.
Well, I mean, there's two things here. They will still need them at the Calderon. There's three different stages, right? They will still need them at the Calderon for Atletico Madrid because there's one more league game to go. They will still need them at the Calderon for the Copa del Rey final. That's stage number two. And stage number three is, I suspect there's a chance that they might still need them at the Calderon next season, because I'm not completely convinced the new stadium will be ready. What happens if it's not, I don't know, because the Calderon will become, I think already has become, in fact, property of the Madrid local government. And the idea is that it will be bulldozed. They'll expand the M30, which is kind of like almost like a North Circular stroke, the M25, sort of internal M25 that runs currently runs underneath the stand. But they'll expand that. They'll put some flats in and so on. So whether if the new stadium up near the airport, which, by the way, I think is a disaster, the other side of the city. But anyway, that's another story. The new stadium up near the airport isn't quite ready. Then, yeah, there is a chance that they're forced to play a couple of games there sometime at the early next season. But it's not entirely clear that they'd actually be allowed to.
All right. Sid, tell us about the game then Wednesday night. 16 minutes in, Atletico 2-0 up. Did you believe?
No. but I think some people were starting to. I mean, look, in a way, and it was impossible to get out of my mind the phrase, it's the hope that kills you, because they go 2-0 up and you think, look, all you're doing is setting yourselves up for another fall. There's absolutely no way this is going to happen. And in a way, I suppose the fact that Isco scored that goal before halftime meant at least it wasn't cruel. I had this image of it getting to 3-0 and Atletico thinking they were going to do it. And then, of course, Sergio Ramos coming up with a 94th-minute header. In the end, though, it did feel like a very Atletico kind of way to see out the Calderon in Europe. You know, they beat Real Madrid, but it was ultimately not worth anything to them. And yet they wanted to express the idea that it was, because the whole of the build-up has been about kind of identity and about that sense that Atletico Madrid have been trying to express that, you know, it's not just about winning for us. There's some other kind of intangibles. It's about supporting the team. It's about loyalty. So it had been built up in such a way that you knew that deep down they knew they were probably not going to win, but that they were also determined that they were going to demonstrate that in defeat, in the end, as Simeone kept pointing out in the press comments, it wasn't a defeat, they won it, the game at least. In defeat, they were still going to be kind of defiant, rebellious, they were still going to support. And then when this incredible storm started with 2 or 3 minutes to go, and they stayed there and they sang through it, and Simeone's on the pitch thumping his chest and cheering them, and afterwards he comes into the press conference, huge grin on his face, saying, I'm really proud of this lot. They're, you know, this is what we've been doing for 5.5 years. Question, of course, is whether or not it can continue. And it sort of got almost forgotten that, well, it's Real Madrid in the final. But yeah. As I say, that was kind of a very Atletico way to end it.
Right. Real Madrid being in the final, not a huge surprise after the first leg, of course. People are always asking about Simeone's future and whether this might change anything. Want to know if there's anything we should know about that. And also, Derek B wants to know our opinion of Zidane as a coach, because Derek B says, I wonder if it's that Derek B, actually. A bad young brother. You wouldn't remember this. But he says, I don't think he gets the credit he deserves.
Yeah. Well, let's start with Simeone then. Yeah. I mean, Simeone and the club, well, not Simeone's never quite said it 100% directly, but the club keep on saying that, you know, the idea is that Simeone sees them into the new stadium. When they were beaten 3-0 by Real Madrid in the first leg, I think that wobbled a little bit. And certainly speaking to someone who knows him quite well, they had a sense that, I wonder if this changes something. You know, not necessarily that Simeone had said it would, but this could change the mentality. Because you can't help thinking, you know, 4 years in a row knocked out by Real Madrid, done extraordinary things. And what Atletico have done shouldn't be seen as normal, even though it's become normal. You know, this is 2 Champions League finals, 1 semi-final, a quarter-final, a Copa del Rey success, a Europa League title, a La Liga title. I mean, in those years, they've been more successful than Real Madrid domestically, at least. And then, of course, being seconds away and a post away from beating them in the European Cup final as well. But you always feel with a club that's not a kind of, if you like, naturally a dominant club, Madrid or Barcelona, obviously, in the Spanish case, that this is... It can never be sustained. It can't be sustained forever. It can't keep on going. And that defeat against Real Madrid, the nature of it, and the fact that they kind of felt a little bit impotent, I sort of started thinking, you've got to think at some stage that this is no good. This can't carry on. I've got to go somewhere else. We've got to push on, and we can't because of what we've got ahead of us. So go somewhere else. I think this return leg, the emotional way that he responded to it suggested he thought, you know, this is great. I can't walk away now. But then he was asked about last year, when after the final he said, you know, I've got to think about my future. I don't know what I can do now. And that this time he came for a second, this is great. Whether there was something in that, something more plausible about his position, something more kind of tangible, you know, this is about him saying, I'm staying. He said, well, no, I'm being spontaneous. It's the moment. It's how I feel now. And you just wonder if maybe it was the emotion of the end, the emotion of saying, right, I'm going, but it's been wonderful. I still think, but the likelihood is he stays for a year in the new stadium and then goes.
Yeah. All right. Zidane.
This is a guy that in a year and a half has got to 2 European Cup finals. It's bonkers.
It is. He says he's got great players.
Well, and he has. Look, there's no doubt about that. You know, he has got very, very good players. And in a way, you know, there is, I think, but that's partly what's held against it. There's a temptation to look at it and say, well, with those players, you know, I could do this. And I don't think that's entirely fair, because I think you've got to be able to manage them. And it's also a backhanded compliment, this kind of, oh, well, he manages the dressing room well. Yeah, but what about the tactical work? What about the physical work? And all the physical preparation, the rotation through the squad and so on, has been his big success this season. I think there's been a couple of moments when tactically you think he's changed that, and that's really worked as well. Critics of him would say he's been fortunate when there's been the right injuries at just the right time, that players have responded in a way that maybe they might not have done. But, you know, he's in a second European Cup final in a row. They're probably going to win the league. And this is a team, by the way, that has only won 1 league in 5 seasons, Real Madrid. So it's pretty impressive.
All right, Sid. I presume the jury is still out on another Liga coaching legend, and I'm referring to Tony Adams, who actually was facing Real Madrid last weekend, that 4-0 defeat for his Granada. Has his Granada side actually scored a goal yet?
I like that. By the way, Tony Adams, yeah, they've scored 1. Oh. Tony Adams, after that game, was saying, you know, no disrespect to Zidane or anything, but swap teams, please, to kind of put the two debates together. The jury, I think, as a manager, isn't out on Adams at all. I think the jury's delivered its verdict, right, in Spain. But I think there is a recognition that kind of he picked up, as he said himself, his words last weekend were, I was on a hiding to nothing, right, in terms of being a coach. But I think there is an appreciation, at least from some, But his role is broader than that. It's about kind of constructing a club. And, you know, he's bringing in a coach to replace himself. There's a sporting director in place now. They will sign very different types of players for next season. So I think ultimately he'll be judged on a kind of a broader picture. But in terms of what he's done as a coach, yeah, I mean, look, there is a sense of, well, he wasn't very good. And I don't know if you've seen the video of last weekend.
Yeah, no, Sid, his job is broader than that because he's also bringing the players Coca-Cola.
Yes, yeah, so he takes off his jacket and he's wearing, you know what, I didn't think he looked quite so much like a waiter. I thought he was more like a sort of a bit of an East End gangster. It was like he takes off his jacket to do the murder and then at the end puts the jacket back on. He was wearing this kind of, well, almost East Endy sort of waistcoat underneath, and yeah, Isco's shouting at him, "Hey waiter, Coca-Cola over here."
Wow, what disrespect.
Sid. Well, Adams. I don't think Adams heard it. I think he would have probably found it quite funny. He did enjoy those dancing videos earlier on.
Oh, yeah. Nice one. Sid, that's been magnificent. We've taken up too much of your time, but many thanks for that extremely in-depth profile of the situation managerially at Real Madrid and stadium-wise for Atletico and all that sort of thing. Hope you have a super time until we speak to you next time, Sid. Adios, senor.
Cheerio.
He wasn't the only person, Tony Adams, who was having, you know, liberties taken with his persona, with his image rights. James Horncastle. What was that?
Yeah.
You're being interviewed innocently on TV on Tuesday in Turin, and bookmakers are having a go.
Mm.
I didn't quite get it. Was it about your haircut?
It was about my curtains. It was quite amusing for me because a few days ago, I was in Rome with some friends for a reunion, and one of them does a lot of gambling on the horses and was going on about how good the social media of this particular bookmaker is.
Oh.
And days later, they took me as their... trolled me.
They trolled you. Excellent.
You right. Associate with people who think that's good.
Unfortunately, that... Wow. Yeah, unfortunately.
I'd be cutting that friend off.
Well, anyway, so there you go. There's Sid there in loquacious form. And Real Madrid going through. They did get a bit of a scare. Everyone chatting about that extraordinary moment when Benzema set up the opening goal. Swampy says Benzema's skill for the goal is getting raved about, but reality is Ronaldo's throw makes it happen. It's true, Ronaldo with a nice throw to set him up, but it's as much about the three Atletico defenders who kind of see him wander past them, isn't it? What do you think?
I thought he was in too tight a space to wriggle out of, and that particularly his last touch was going to take the ball out of play. And
right.
He didn't. He somehow kept it in.
No, he did very well. That's for sure.
Well, I think, didn't Simeone say something to the effect afterwards that, you know, they didn't actually think it was possible for him to get past them?
Right.
But he did.
He did. He certainly did. Setting up Isco, who had another great game, and thus the exciting notion of the BBC versus the BBC in the final is a little bit in doubt, BBC being Benzema, Bale and Cristiano. And, of course, that's the same acronym that they're so very excited about in Turin for Barzagli, Bonucci and Chiellini.
It is, but we've seen that against Monaco, but we haven't seen that a lot so far this season from Juventus because they've mainly played with a back four and Barzagli has been the player to sit out on the bench. And I think that just goes to show, again, the tactical flexibility of this Juventus team because, again, in the first leg against Monaco, they switched system five times and they were so difficult for their opponents to read. They kept Leonardo Jardim guessing, and I imagine they'll keep Real Madrid and Zinedine Zidane guessing. But I think people reduce this final to Real Madrid's attack against Juventus' defence. But if you look at their journey in the Champions League so far this season, what really stands out is the fact that they've won all of their knockout games by an aggregate scoreline of 3-0. You know, they've dominated by three clear goals, sorry. And it's as much about what they've done going forward.
Mm.
Particularly that's where they've evolved and really made strides in the last 2 years since they last reached the final. And they seem to have ascended to a kind of new state of kind of an awareness of how good they are. I think they're really confident that they can do it this time. I thought 2 years ago they believed that they were still a bit of a surprise, that it was unexpected for them to get to the final. Whereas this time around they do feel it's their time, and a lot of the stars are aligning for them.
All right. Conceded their first goal from open play in the entire competition on Tuesday night, thanks to young Kylian Mbappe. The first goal of any kind they conceded in almost 700 minutes. Dani Alves with an extraordinary second goal after Mandzukic had opened the scoring. Dybala had another good game. Obviously, Dani Alves in general just looked pretty flipping amazing.
Barcelona must really rue letting him go, because they've still haven't replaced him properly, and he's playing absolutely superbly for Juve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for 3 weeks he has been their standout player, and before that he was considered a flop. Mm-hmm. Because this kind of shortly after the start of the season, he had a fracture of his ankle bone, I think, and was out for a while. And up until that point, he hadn't really done anything. And so Allegri was making a real point of basically telling journalists how, you know, yeah, you're not surely discovering Dani Alves overnight. This is someone who, over the course of his entire career, has won 29 titles. Mm. And he's now going to, what, his fourth or fifth Champions League final? So, you know.
Impressive. All right, Barney Rone writing on Gonzalo Higuain. Some strikers have a yard of space in their head. Matched against Monaco's super svelte athletes, Higuain looked at times as if he keeps one up his jumper. That's that's Barney there. Dom Dumination says, why is Andrea Barzagli so underhyped? People talk a lot about Bonucci and Chiellini, but somehow always seem to forget him.
Barzagli is considered the most important signing that Juventus made to basically start this cycle. If you ask the president, Andrea Agnelli, how this all began, he came in the January of the season before Conte came,
right,
for 600 grand from Wolfsburg, because a lot of people point to Pirlo's free transfer being the signing that changed everything for Juventus, but the owner thinks otherwise, thinks it's Barzagli.
Right. And not Bentner on loan then?
No, not Bentner or Anelka.
Yeah. How about that? Well, Monaco go out, heads high. They can, of course, seal the French title this Sunday night when they will be hosting Lille. PSG, who are 3 points behind them, are at Ass. A Juve can also seal the title on Sunday night when they visit Roma.
Yeah, they just need a point at the Olimpico. But it's a must-win game for Roma as well, because they have Napoli breathing down their necks. They played very well against Milan on Sunday night.
4-1.
On BT Sport. And
BT Sport, James, very much the place to find out what happens in both those title races this Sunday night.
Exactly.
When an especially extended edition of the European Football Show will not only round up all the action, but also bring you live goals from Monaco's game and Roma Juventus.
Yeah.
But anyway, enough of that continental stuff for now. I'm a hankering to get back to the good old comfortable vistas of the Premier League. Let's hear from Jacob about St Mary's after this. Yeah, St Mary's, Arsenal, getting their first... Is this right? Their first win at Southampton since the days of the Invincibles?
Yes, since 2003.
Right.
Well, their first league win, because they won there in the Cup.
Oh, that's true. In the season. Quite but substantially,
last,
didn't
last
they?
Last two visits before then have been quite traumatic.
Was it a very exciting night for you there, then?
It wasn't a very good game. Arsenal, they didn't start as you might have hoped after the win on Sunday against Manchester United in the first half. Checkmate, two very good saves from Gabbiadini and Redmond. Southampton just lack a bit of conviction and oomph at the moment. I think the season's kind of drifting, and Arsenal hadn't really done that much until Ozil suddenly turned up. A few minutes before he did this, he tried to counter and had knocked a pass straight out for a throw. And then a few minutes later, at which point you were kind of thinking, this is not going to be Arsenal's night, he came up with a pass through to Sanchez, and Sanchez just came up with a brilliant turn and scored. And that was enough for Arsenal. They just had enough quality compared to Southampton in those areas to see themselves over the line. And improbably, given what happened, the state of things after the Crystal Palace defeat a month ago, Arsenal, it's not in their hands yet, but come Tuesday night, when they play Sunderland at home, they could be third.
Well, okay, so here's the situation. They are now above Man United in fifth. They're 3 points behind Man City. They're 4 points behind Liverpool, but they have a game in hand on Liverpool. Now, Arsenal's running Stoke, and then Sunderland, as you mentioned, at home, and Everton at home, whereas Liverpool, only two games. They're at West Ham this weekend, who, of course, have just beaten Spurs, and then Liverpool host Borough, but they need Liverpool to slip up, or Manchester City maybe to slip up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, City at home to Leicester, and that is potentially a tricky game for them, given Leicester's counter-attacking qualities and how City can be so
well,
hard.
Well, the only decent performance that the Leicester had under Ranieri.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So City are the early game on Saturday, Arsenal are the late game.
Ooh.
Of course, I think the general kind of feeling after last night was that this is the game, this is the weekend for Arsenal, if it's going to happen, because Stoke away has always been the game for Arsenal, which has given them quite a...
What's their record like there?
Not very good.
They haven't won in six visits.
They wouldn't have won there since, the Aaron Ramsey leg break, I guess. But it's not been their ground, and they have to win. They would be a point behind Liverpool, who are going to West Ham, precisely the kind of team who they struggle against. West Ham, you would expect to employ very similar tactics to how they took on Spurs, which is to sit deep and try to play on the break, which, as we've seen with Liverpool, doesn't really suit their style. And indeed, Slaven Bilic is yet to lose to either Brendan Rodgers or Jurgen Klopp since taking over as West Ham's manager.
Three straight clean sheets as well for West Ham.
West Ham,
yeah. So if this is going to happen for Arsenal, this is the weekend. You wouldn't be surprised to see Liverpool drop points given their record against the lower teams. But it's just whether Arsenal can capitalise against Stoke.
Luckily, they have character.
They have lots of character. But the more interesting thing that's going on at Arsenal is this potential civil war between Gazidis and Wenger, which is kind of breaking out at the moment. And before the game, Wenger was saying that he doesn't know what a director of football is for. He doesn't understand it. And he'd be the only person who'll ever have control over the technical direction of Arsenal. And we've seen how well that's gone for the last 13 years. But even Gazidis is the CEO who wants to bring in someone who can share some of the burden. And I don't think that's ever been Arsene Wenger's favourite thing. I think he doesn't particularly like to delegate. I think if you compare him to Sir Alex Ferguson, who had total control over the direction of things at Manchester United, but didn't have to be doing everything all the time.
Whereas and you also get the feeling with Wenger, regularly.
Yes, whereas with Wenger, he seems to want to do absolutely everything. So sort of the word coming out of that is that it's kind of him or Gazidis.
Well, so suggestions have been that whilst there was an offer on the table last autumn that he could have signed then and there, that now the club are trying to insert some sort of clause or condition regarding the arrival of a director of football.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they can get top four, he's going to be in a strong position. If they win the FA Cup final, which I doubt they will given their opponents, then suddenly the complexion of things completely changes, and suddenly Wenger's, he's finished above Klopp, he's finished above Mourinho, maybe he's not this busted flush, and he's done it again, he's finished in the top four again, more Champions League football. And if it comes down to a PR war, who are you backing, the most important figure in Arsenal's history or Gazidis, who's not particularly popular with the Arsenal fans anyway? It's not like Gazidis is coming into this on a wave of support from the stands. He's not exactly David Dean, who was a hugely influential figure and one huge Wenger ally. So, but it is very interesting, I think, for Arsenal, regardless of whether they get the top four, because it's been a club that hasn't fulfilled potential, so much inertia, and they haven't really tried to do anything different. So, it is
aside from playing
very,
back three, yes, which has delivered five wins out of six.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see Wenger resistant to this change.
Right. Well, it's refreshing to get some chat about his future as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Has there been any suggestion that perhaps he should take this job that he doesn't quite know what it entails, despite not knowing what it entails?
I was reading Sam Wallace in the Telegraph yesterday, who said, Wenger would be, if you take Wenger 20 years ago, he'd be the absolute perfect archetype of a director of football, which was a good point.
But not now.
He would be a good director of football, probably.
He would now.
I think he would be, but I don't think he would want to be.
He seems the obvious candidate. If Arsenal need a director of football, they sort of have one already.
Okay. Well, we're going to keep you posted, listeners.
Well, of course, the thing about a director of football is that they are sort of in place to find a new manager as well.
So he can groom his successor.
Yeah.
Which he's been so good at, kicking out Vieira, kicking out Henry, blah, blah, blah.
Wow. Manchester City then, taking on Leicester. This is the Etihad, not at the King Power, which is a shame, because I don't know if you've seen Leicester City's groundsman, who came up with this extraordinary kind of fractal effect on the pitch last weekend, has now cut the club's badge, fox and all, into the centre circle with a lawnmower.
Man's an artist.
He is, isn't he?
We were discussing on the radio the other day, how does he do it?
Does he
have to get off his lawnmower and run up the steps to the stand to have a look down, take a picture with his phone? Or does he have people, you know, sort of banksmen up in right. the stands directing him? But someone, Spoilsport, made the rather obvious point. He uses GPS, apparently.
Oh, does he?
Apparently so.
Wow. I'm surprised more clubs don't do this. I mean, you could sponsor your pitch, couldn't you, really?
Yeah.
But this is at the rather plain.
Well, I mean, they do that in rugby.
Do they?
Well,
they
with dye.
Oh, with dye, right, yeah. And, of course, you can just digitally, you know, with technology. But anyway, this is going to be at the rather plainer pitch at the Etihad. Are City going to get past Leicester?
Well, this was the scene of Leicester's greatest performances last season. That Mahrez goal is kind of reminiscent of Ronaldinho against Chelsea a few years back. But I'm signed with Jacob on this. I think Man City, because of their whole philosophical setup with Pep and his kind of unwillingness to compromise, I think this could play into their hands. And Leicester have beaten them in their last two games against Man City. So,
but company wasn't playing.
Big shakes
last time.
Yeah, but on the turn against Jamie Vardy, I'd still back Vardy.
Really? Okay. No Aguero, probably. Team Zizou says, I'd like to comment on Kevin De Bruyne. Jimbo mentioning he'd seem somewhat quieter this season. A couple of reasons for this. Firstly, he's playing a more withdrawn role under Guardiola. He's also hit the woodwork 9 times in the league this season, which, according to Team One Zizou, is more than twice as much as any other player.
And he hit the woodwork against Chelsea when it was 1-0. The season could have been so different. But I think he's struggled a bit since then.
Do you think that got in his head?
I think so, a little bit.
All right. What about Silva? We don't talk enough about him. Riley St. Clair says he is beautiful at footing a ball, but I agree about his efficacy. He seems almost less than the sum of his parts, which makes him symbolic of this City team. Also, he seems lacking in personality, says Riley St. Clair, who's really not a fan. Numbers 10 like Totti and Baggio and Maradona.
Pseudonym
and
of AC Jimbo.
No. Have that ability to drag their sometimes limited colleagues along with them. Silva seems less bothered. Here comes Mr. Pepperpot, though, to say says, I can't agree. As a season ticket holder, since the late 70s, I'd say he's the best player I've ever seen in a blue shirt. Sterling, De Bruyne and Jesus will all get credited with assists on Saturday. It was Silva who passed the ball to each of them, including the goal that he then went on to score himself. That pretty much settles it, doesn't it? Mr. Pepperbot wins the Silva argument. We'll move on. But here's a quick correction, producer Ben, saying Kevin De Bruyne hasn't hit the woodwork twice as much as anybody else because Paul Pogba's hit the frame of the goal 6 times. It's a lot, isn't it? Barry?
Yes.
Chelsea, Friday night, at the Hawthorns, can seal the title.
That is correct.
Mm. Did you see their game against Borough?
Yes, all right. I did.
Did you see Brad Guzan's performance? All 3 of the Chelsea goals passing between his legs. It was most unfortunate. Logan Jessup said, can we have some thoughts of Brad Guzan? Is he terrible, or have I only ever seen the poor performances from him?
Yeah, I don't think he particularly captured the imagination of Villa fans when he was there, certainly towards the end of his time there.
Is that back-to-back relegations for Guzan?
Mm. Must be, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but not as good as Gested. 3 relegations.
Oh, 3.
In a row.
Wow.
Not in a row, but in the Premier League, yes. Mm. In his Premier League seasons, 3 in a row.
Well, they were all very disappointed. Guzan seeing Chelsea players relentlessly exploiting the hole between his legs. Fabregas coming up with his 11th assist of the season. Hawthorns, by the way, is not the easiest of grounds when you're a Chelsea player. They've only had 1 win in 5, and various managers have come a cropper there as well. And they'll be all right this time, do you think?
I think so. I think Conte's mental preparation of his players is second to none, particularly in the title running. I remember in his last season at Juventus when he really wanted them to break the 100-point barrier. They had a game which they really didn't have to win. They could have just had a party.
Mm.
And to kind of get a reaction out of his players before that game and make sure they were fully focused, he decided to completely rip Gigi Buffon to shreds in the team meeting. And that got everyone's attention. And they went out the next day and destroyed Caleri. So
wow.
I'm not sure he will be employing exactly the same tactics, but I'm sure he'll get them mentally right for this game.
Right, okay.
Seems to be speculation that Inter are preparing a massive bid to lure Conte away from Chelsea. Do you think he would go?
It's on the front page of Gazzetta today because this week Inter sacked their manager Stefano Pioli when, yes, they've been without a win in seven games, but they didn't really need to sack him.
It's hardly news them sacking
the
manager.
No, in fact, it's their third sacking this year. But this is seen as a gesture made towards coaches that they want to attract in the summer. And they're really trying to attract Conte because they've not only sacked Pioli to do that, but they've kind of tried to make this club appealing as possible by bringing in someone he worked with very closely with the national team in Gabriele Orreale, who used to work with Inter, trying to bring in the current coach of Genoa's U team, who used to work with him, and basically signalling that they want to sign the players that Conte couldn't sign for Chelsea, like Reginald England, for example, whilst also making him a very wealthy man and saying that they would pay him £70 million a year. So.
But he's Juventino through and through.
He is, but he has. He famously said whilst he was with Juventus that he is the number one fan of the club he works for at the time. And whether that's Inter or whether that's Milan or whether that's Chelsea, it doesn't matter. He's a professional. His kind of loyalties to that club didn't die when he was a player and moved into being a manager, but yeah, he wouldn't exclude anything.
Interesting. They could just save themselves some money and get Massimo Carrera instead.
Yeah, they could.
Conte's wife and daughter still live in Italy. Like they haven't moved to London with him. So I have a bit of a feeling he might do one in the summer, leave Chelsea.
Really? And when that you get a feeling, Barry, that's worth listening to.
Sometimes.
That is a very big point that Barry's just made.
About the family?
Yeah.
Right.
Very big.
There you go, Barry.
Barry's bones.
Well done. Let's just take a moment to think about that.
Yeah.
And then, if you're ready, Jacob, I want to talk about the battle for survival.
Football Weekly's official shaving partner, Cornerstone, have just launched their brand new razor. There's no gimmicky name, but it's born of an obsession to design a classic razor that gives you an even closer, smoother shave than ever before. Try it for yourself and take £10 off your first order at cornerstone.co.uk/guardian.
The biggest game of this weekend, surely, Palace against Hull. Hull, who are 1 point behind Swansea. Yep, on the wrong side of that dotted line. Swansea play Sunderland, while Hull travel to the team that's 4 points above them and not out of trouble themselves, Crystal Palace. A Palace team who are pretty rubbish at home, just got beaten 5-0. And we know Hull aren't great on the road, but where did Burnley get their only away win of the season? Right there at Selhurst Park, Jacob.
Yes, I kind of feel like Hull might have blown it after last week. But then again, maybe Sunderland can do them another favour and come up with a very pointless win against Swansea at the Stadium of Light. I just think that Allardyce team in an absolute must-win game, as impressed as I am by Marco Silva's work since coming in January at Hull, that I think they're going to do it Palace and get the win that they need, which would be important for them given that they go to Old Trafford on the final day of the season.
Palace too, yeah.
Palace, which, okay, they might, that's not perhaps the fearsome proposition it was a couple of years ago, but Hull are at home to Tottenham on the final day. So you kind of feel like they have one chance to do this.
One shot. What about Sunderland's hopes of extending that winning run to two matches? They're at home to Swansea, as we say. Swansea, who are unbeaten in three. They've only conceded one goal in that time.
Ooh. Well, Paul Clement seems to have galvanised Swansea after a long, wobbly period. I would fancy them to beat Sunderland in this, but and really ramp up the pressure on Palace, who play the next day. So I kind of hope Swansea beat Sunderland because it just can make things more interesting.
Yeah. The thing is, everyone expected Hull to beat Sunderland, and that was a massive problem.
I didn't.
There you go, Barry.
Oh, Barry did.
Barry called it.
Ah.
Yeah, in the face of naysayers.
They're kind of not fortunate, but Palace, their big results have come against the big teams, which perhaps would give Hull some kind of strange confidence because they went to Chelsea, Liverpool, and they beat Arsenal at home. and obviously against after beating Chelsea, they go to Southampton, they lose. They lost to Burnley at home just after beating Liverpool or Arsenal, whichever team it was at that point. Right. So they can struggle against teams that the classic that sit back, and if Hull can do that, they do have some pretty interesting players going forward.
They're appalling away from home, though. That's
Hull.
Yeah.
You got a point last time out against Southampton.
There you go. But Southampton.
Yeah, on the whole.
It's midday on Sunday, that game. One to tune in for, methinks. Other games this weekend. You've got Spurs against Man U, which should be the big game, but...
It's the last game at White Hart Lane, no?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So it's a huge game for Spurs, yeah. Without a doubt. Game that kind of brings... I think someone was asking on Twitter what our favourite memories of White Hart Lane are. Mine is linked to Spurs Manchester United.
What was that then?
It was probably really from the lads, it's Spurs days, when Spurs were 3-0 up at half-time in 2001, then got beaten 5-3.
Cool.
But I don't think with this United side it's going to happen, given I think they haven't scored away from home against the top six, have they?
So. No. No Mourinho side has in over 2 years.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. Man U, of course, playing Thursday night at home to Celta Vigo. So that's interesting.
What do we think of this... The controversy over the Paul Pogba transfer fee, Mina Raiola trousering 41 million.
Yeah, what do you think about it, Barry?
I think it's great for Mina Raiola and fair play to him for managing to get paid by three.
So that's
people.
Extra to the transfer fee that's widely quoted.
Yeah, Juve gave him 27 million. And
for brokering the deal?
Yeah, Manchester United gave him 19.4.
Okay.
On top of the transfer fee. Mm. And United also gave him another 2.6 sort of as his fee for negotiating Pogba's salary.
It's so extraordinary.
It is bonkers.
So Juve effectively paid part of the money that they received to Raiola just
yeah,
for
in fact, when the deal went through,
yeah.
They obviously had to make an announcement to the stock exchange because they're a publicly listed company, and that was factored in. They said, look, of the 105 million euros that United have paid, we have taken 72, so that you could kind of join the dots there.
Right.
The surprise, I think, from this is that how much this Football Leaks claims that United paid Raiola as well, because the way it was reported was at the time that Juventus were paying the agent fees there because of the arrangement of how Pogba went to Juventus in the first place. So that's the big surprise. But then you also think 40 million made from this deal, but then you also think that he took Henrik Mkhitaryan to Manchester United as well, Zlatan Ibrahimovic to Manchester United as well. So he's made even more money from them. For that summer. Insane, really.
Right. Well, FIFA have launched an inquiry, which is, you know, in the face of those people who thought that their days of having inquiries were gone when they fired all the people who were... cleaning house.
Mm.
Mm. We'll see.
Well, but David Kahn is over in Bahrain at the moment at the FIFA get together. So, Raiola hasn't actually done anything wrong, has he? I mean, it's clearly a conflict of interest, but I don't think he's done anything illegal or against the rules. He's just, yeah, but it is a staggering amount of money. It
certainly is. Everton are playing Watford. Neither side has a win in their last three games. Yeah? On Friday, this is apparently.
Yeah.
God, they've buried
this
one.
So many games.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I think there's games every single day. Yeah, Everton-Watford, if you wanted to skip a game, it might be this one. Neither side, as I mentioned, has won in their last three or even scored a goal in their last three.
And Everton are, in this morning's Guardian, talking about potentially selling Ross Barkley.
If
he won't sign a new contract.
Will he not?
If he won't, yeah.
Oh, if he won't.
If he continues to refuse, Koeman is apparently very much...
Traditional question to ask at this point, Jacob, is where do you see him?
Where do I see him?
Mm.
Tottenham are interested, but I don't think he's better than anything they've got.
No, but depth.
Yes, but I feel like you could get someone better and cheaper from abroad.
But not if Mina Raiola is their agent. Okay. That's Everton Watford. Tick. Bournemouth are taking on Burnley. Both are safe. Bet everybody wants a bit of Josh King, don't they? I bet big clubs are hovering around the goal-scoring Norwegian midfielder?
The Kingslayer.
The Kingslayer. Yeah. Is that his actual name? Or no. Did you just come up with that?
I imagine people already have.
The Kingslayer.
Yeah.
Right. Is he the least foreigner in the Premier League? I mean, he doesn't look foreign. He doesn't sound foreign. He doesn't have a foreign name.
No.
Yeah, he just seems very English for a Norwegian.
Well, Carl Jenkinson's almost Finnish, so.
Huh.
Yeah.
He's in deep cover.
How could you be almost Finnish?
Well, he doesn't play for Finland. I think his mum's Finnish, but he doesn't play for Finland.
Producer Ben's just working from his slumbers to say that Ashley Barnes, who plays for Burnley, is actually Austrian.
Is he?
He's now checking it.
Well, Simone Perotta was famously born on Ashton-on-the-Lyme, wasn't he?
There you go. Yeah. Borough taking on Saints. Saints have had two shots on target in their last two games. They've managed just 12 in their last six Premier League games. They're not really doing too much. Borough, who became on Monday officially the most relegated side in Premier League history. They've only scored 26 goals all season. But then we saw what relegation did to Sunderland. Turned them into a winning machine. So who knows what festival of goals awaits at the Riverside on Saturday. Ben, any confirmation on that? Ashley Barnes' Austrianness? He's got a cap for Austria. Have some of that, doubters. For the under-20s. But still, we're going to pause for a second or two and then come back with loads more important events happening this weekend. If you're a fan of Jacob Steinberg, and we're all big fans here, Jacob, may I just say, at this juncture, then you will be as excited as we are to learn that, Jacob, you've been added to the bill for the London Festival of Football Writing. You're going to be doing the London Fields event, I hope you know this, on Saturday, May the 20th. What does that involve? Are you going to do like a few songs, car trip? What do you do?
Talk about London football with Philippe.
With Philippe Auclair?
Yeah, and Steve Tung and Mina Rizuki.
Mina Ozuki. Hey, listeners, you can get 10% off any festival events if you use the offer code Football Weekly. But don't tell anyone else. It's only for Football Weekly listeners like you. Details for that, by the way, on the Guardian Football Weekly page, where you'll also get a little link to the Gazetta Football London that we're doing, James, the Union Chapel. This is at the Union Chapel where they have like bands and stuff, but we're going to be there on Monday the 19th of June with Paolo Bandini. Talking about, you know, the golden age of calcio. Well, and why, of course, it's about to return and that kind of thing and funny memories and the good old days. Also, we're all going off to Dublin again, aren't we? When's that? That's the 7th of June when Barry, you'll be there, producer Ben, Amy Lawrence and Barney Rone together on one stage. And second captains Ken Early and Seamus O'Reilly will be kicking things off with an in-depth chat about the crime novels of Steve Bruce. I want to be there. You can be there, listener, but you have to act fast. Those tickets going quickly. Where can you get tickets, everybody?
TheGuardian.com/footballweekly.
Now, Football League playoffs. Millwall and Bradford have made it to the League One playoff final. That'll be happening on, is it Saturday, Bradford-Millwall?
Saturday the 20th of May.
Right. But before that, this weekend, you've got all sorts of drama. The League Two playoffs, Sunday, Blackpool taking on Luton, Carlisle up against Exeter, while in the Championship, Fulham take on Reading and Huddersfield are up against Sheffield Wednesday.
That's a derby of sorts, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yorkshire, yeah. West Yorkshire.
Oh, yeah. Right. I've noticed, actually, and I suppose, listeners, you have too, that James's Yorkshire accent, it's been a little bit more pronounced today.
Ah.
Have you been frequenting Yorkshire people?
There will be a bit of that, yes. But I spoke to my mum before I came on.
Ah,
the show.
There you go.
So,
right.
There you go.
Excellent.
And also my wife has been away for a week.
Oh,
she
right.
Beat shit out of me.
Does she mollify you?
Oh, yeah, she does, yeah.
What's her accent? Caroline, of course.
She's sort of London, Oxford kind of.
Oh, yeah, right, okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Blackburn Rovers. We were talking about them on Monday, and Barry, you mentioned there might be some selective amnesia. Irish Rover, with a very polite riposte, says, respectfully, Barry, no selective amnesia for the purposes of being offended, though to be fair, The Guardian was not alone in being unmoved by the obvious lunacy at the beginning of the Indian owner's reign of horror. He does, though, under one or two other posters, also quote Fernando Duarte, who says, "I hope they go down." This was in the fallout of the Blackburn Rovers kind of abuse, to be fair, of Steve Keane.
Yeah.
And various suggestions that relegation would be karmic retribution for that. He does also cite an article by Jeremy Alexander, which I have to say doesn't make great reading in hindsight. Jeremy writes, "Contrary to terrorist chants, Venkies do know what they're doing, and they will go on doing it. There's no excuse for the level of abuse directed at Keane by fans. They should be flattered that Venkies embrace Blackburn in a portfolio that includes the famous old Bombay Cricket Club and Sachin Tendulkar. Verbal terrorism will get them nowhere. Though Venkies put Rovers on a stable financial footing and set up their challenge for a return to the Premier League, they have made a rod for their own back by poor communications." Well, yeah. Anyway, FIFA, they've neutralised and incapacitated their corruption investigations. It's good.
Yeah. The suggestion is that the reason, who's it, Borbelli and Hans-Joachim Eckhart have been got rid of is because they set up an investigation into Gianni Infantino's use of private planes.
Oh.
And it found him, you know, not guilty of any impropriety, but apparently didn't take too kindly to that. But FIFA have said that it's nothing to do with that, and it's their committee, and they can have whoever they want on it. So, Yaboo sucks.
Okay, is Trump copying FIFA? Is FIFA copying Trump?
I don't know. It's interesting, though, isn't it? Europa League is tonight, Jacob, and it features Ajax, and you went to Ajax.
Yeah.
God, how exciting was that? Was that the realisation of a childhood dream? Did you have Ajax pyjamas?
To go to
pajamas?
The training ground, yes.
Yeah, you know, to hang out with Van der Sar, who's now their marketing...
CEO. He's the CEO.
He's the CEO.
He used to be their marketing director.
Oh, right. When you wrote the article, it very much came across that he was the marketing whiz.
It says he's the CEO.
I must read it again.
Yes. But he was there. He was their marketing director. That's right. How he came in. Because he did a marketing degree at the Johan Cruyff Institute after retiring.
Can you do a marketing degree? I'd be disappointed if I went to the Johan Cruyff Institute.
He did it was there that he studied it. But he didn't want to be a... didn't want to be a coach. It wasn't for him.
Okay.
He found, and then he saw so much at Manchester United.
Is this
sponsorship deals at Manchester United?
Right.
They've got a new set of youngsters coming through, like Justin Kluivert, Matthias de Ligt, and people like Kasper Dolberg and Hakim, who's a little bit older. The goalkeeper's young. Some of these players have been bought for quite small sums of money.
Right. Extraordinary stat in your piece that seven of the starting lineup against Lyon were 21 or under.
Yeah, and then two of the older ones, David Klaassen, the captain, is 24, and I think Lasse Schoner is 30. So Joel Veltman, who I spoke to at the training ground, was suspended that night, so he's 25, and he's one of the elder statesmen of this team.
Wow.
Which is kind of amazing. But the thing for Ajax over the years has always been that they've lost their players, and one of the points that Van der Sar was making was that when he left, and when he and the Boer brothers left, they were sort of 28, 29, they'd won the European Cup, and they'd been to another final, they'd been to a semi-final as well. Whereas these days, those kind of players that Ajax have now, you look at the average age, they would be leaving at around 22, 23.
Right.
These teams now get picked off because of the amount of money that there is floating around the big leagues, and it's very unlikely that a club like Ajax can keep this all together.
So this success that we're seeing at the moment, this team, which everyone's enjoying so much, is there any way that it's sustainable?
I think the way to sustain it if you're going to sell them, is to sell them for big money, like they did with Milik, who went to Napoli, who was sold for 25, 30 million to Napoli, and then you can reinvest that money.
Mm.
He compared them a little bit to Monaco, the difference being that Monaco have a rich Russian billionaire owner and some helpful links to a certain Portuguese agent as well, which helps them get players.
And they don't pay any tax.
Yep, whereas Ajax do not have that. They don't have that kind of, that level of backing. So there is that sadness attached to it. It happened at the start of the century when they had players like Van der Vaart and Snyder and Zlatan and others like that, and they
Mido,
Ryan Babel. No. And they didn't manage to keep hold of them. They got to one Champions League quarterfinal, and then it all fell away. But they are they're such an interesting club, though, with you know that Cruyff ethos running through it. And Peter Bosch, the manager, is a bit of a Pep fanatic and a Cruyff fanatic who has just introduced this mad attacking style in, since coming in last year. And it took a while to work, and then. They're unlikely to win the league. The final.
It's possible, though, isn't it? After last weekend,
yeah, because Feyenoord lost 3-0 at Excelsior on Sunday, and Ajax won with Justin Kluivert scoring the opening goal in a 4-0 win. So Ajax
go ahead, Eagles.
Yes. So is that? I think that might be who Feyenoord are playing.
Oh, really?
I think so. I'm not sure, but Feyenoord are at home on Sunday afternoon, and Ajax are at Willem II. Who I believe they didn't beat at home earlier in the season when they were kind of getting their act together under Bosch. But he's a very interesting manager.
People talk about Wolfgang Wolf being at Wolfsburg and Arsene Wenger being at Arsenal, but Bosch being the manager of a Dutch team is pretty much the ultimate
Absolutely, yeah. And he's a very good Bosch. He absolutely loves Cruyff.
He's the Bosch. Who's the Bosch? If he had brothers called Bish and Bash, that'd be terrific.
Yeah. He speaking of directors of football, he had a spell at Feyenoord, which didn't go at all well, but he said that it helped him learn and learn more about the way that managers have to, the way that directors of football have to operate within certain budgets. So it gives him appreciation of Mark Overmars' work, you know, another legend in the director of football role at Ajax. You've got Bergkamp, Aaron Winter, Richard Witschger in on coaching roles. So there's a lot of knowledge at that place.
Right. Maybe Arsenal could get one of them as director of football.
Well, Overmars is constantly linked.
Oh, there you go. There you go. All right. Well, anyway, that's very exciting. This weekend, all coming down to the final day in the Eredivisie. In other Dutch news, Dick Advocaat is back for a third spell in charge of the Oranje, and he's brought Ruud Gullit with him. Probably to explain how to watch football. Also, this weekend, I mentioned it's the penultimate round in France. All the games happening on Sunday evening, which is very exciting, but not as exciting as Roma against Juventus. As you mentioned, James, Juve only need a point. Roma, though, are only 1 point ahead of Napoli. And if they slip to third, that means they go into the playoff round to qualify for the group stages, where Italian clubs have an absolutely rubbish record.
Yeah. In fact, Roma lost in the playoffs back at the start of the season against Porto. Really shot themselves up in the foot. Three sendings off in two legs.
Now, they're coming off a big 4-1 win away at the San Siro, where they beat Milan. No last appearance at that grand old stadium from the similarly grand old Francesco Totti. And there was a lot of opprobrium for manager Luciano Spalletti for not bringing him on when they were, say, 3-1 up or whatever. Spalletti responding, "I made a mistake coming back here." Is that the definitive word now? Is he definitely going to be out?
I think so. I believe that he does not think the press give him due credit for the job that he's done at the club since he's been back, which was mainly to prepare for a transition from Francesco Totti. And whenever they play well and win big, usually the story, instead of being on the performance that Roma have put in away at a place like San Siro, is replaced by, "Why didn't you play Totti?" And he says, "Look, if I threw him on for 5 minutes, you'd say I'm showing a lack of respect to him. If I don't play him, I get the same criticism, and I'm tired and fed up about it."
Right. Napoli, who are 1 point behind Roma as it stands, have a difficult match away at Torino. Joe Hart's Torino, of course, probably his penultimate appearance for Il Toro. Inter will be hosting Sassuolo with their third manager of the season, youth coach Stefano Vecchi.
He's got a 100% win ratio.
Oh, there you go.
Because he took charge of Inter when they played, I think, Crotone between the De Boer and Pioli eras.
And the decision to fire Pioli now, that's a message to Conte. That's what that's about.
It's a message to people like Conte and Simeone, basically, to say, look, we are looking for a new manager. We have loads of money. But I think they are definitely trying to make, as I said earlier, trying to make the job as appealing to Conte as possible by trying to appoint people who are close to him.
Right. I say third manager. It's actually the fourth because they started out with Mancini, didn't they?
Yeah, sacked Mancini 12 days before the start of the season, brought in De Boer, got rid of him. Vecchi stood in for him, and then Pioli obviously replaced him. Started very, very well, won 11 of his first 13 games. There's a lot of change at Inter at the moment. They've just appointed a new director of sport who is supposed to be basically looking after the Suning network of clubs, because a little bit like the Pozzos at Udinese, who had Granada once upon a time, still have Watford. Basically, he's going to be in charge of the recruitment of that network. But Inter already have a director of sport who's just signed a new 3-year contract called Pier Ausilio. So again, more muddled thinking, very confused.
All right.
So that's where they are.
Right. Juventus then with a chance to win the title, and then they're going to be back in Rome on Wednesday for the Coppa against the other Roman side, Lazio. So on for the treble potentially with the Champions League as well. Let's just finish off with this question from Frank Sidekick, who says, double promotions for Spal Ferrara, first time in Serie A since 1967. What's going on? Is it a heartwarming, non-racist Italian story?
It is. It's a wonderful story because, as he says, Spal came up last year into Serie B for the first time, I think in, I think it's 23 years, in the second division, and have been on the march ever since with Semplici, who was basically a coach who's coached almost every team in Tuscany. He was the youth team coach at Fiorentina, brought through people like Bernardeschi and Federico Chiesa. But yeah, Spal, not too long ago, went out of business and had to essentially reform with another local club.
But historically, they're one of the biggest names.
Fabio Capello, for example, began his first steps in football there. And they've still got players who, for example, they've had this fusion with Giacomense, which is another local team, and they've still got a player who was on Giacomense's books rather than Spal, who's Lazzari, who's still at the club. And they've got some really interesting players like Alex Meret, for example, who's the goalkeeper who's considered as good as Donnarumma, who's on loan from Udinese, and a fullback called Kevin Bonifazi. They've also got a guy called Mirko Antinucci, who Leeds fans will be familiar with because he was pretty poor at Leeds, but now looks like he couldn't get Leeds promoted, but he's getting Spal promoted instead.
Brilliant. Yeah. Nice one. Excellent. Well, more of that kind of thing, of course, on Sunday night, James. But sadly, that's it for now. If you haven't already left, we'll be back on Monday. Have yourself a super weekend. Check out Barry and Jacob's things to look forward to if you're bereft of anything to get excited by. And that little white light is Truth and Movies podcast, of course. But I'm not going to bang on about that again. Anyway, although you can hear what we think of Aliens Covenant in the
current
one.
Do you have, like, catchphrases on your movie?
Not yet, no.
Like, hello to Jason Isaacs.
Yeah, we need to work on that.
Or do you have code of conduct?
No.
Cinema-going code of conduct?
No.
Lagging behind.
It's very much in its infancy, but, yeah, we need to build on all those kind of in-jokes. And
Yeah.
We need some listeners. but anyway, that's it for today, everybody. And we'll catch up with you after the weekend. Cheerio.
The Guardian.